negotiated terms of engagement. And it is clear that the campaign did negotiate clear terms, and that it would appear that those terms were met. And overall, the appearance of Ron Paul on Glenn Beck was not a disaster. I wouldn't call it a great interview the way some have, but I would say it was decent. It was okay. It was some exposure. I think a little bit too much time was spent on death threats to Glenn Beck from who knows who, and even who knows if they actually occurred. And a little bit too much time on asking Congressman Paul about his position on the 9/11. Pretty frequent that we have interviewers asking Congressman Paul questions, which he has already clearly answered over and over and over and unequivocally. So can we stop asking him questions about 9/11? Can we stop asking him whether he is going to run as a third party or independent candidate? Can we let him use the face time that he gets for substantive purposes? Please. Thank you. Let's go ahead then. There's a new Ron Paul TV ad out. I'll play that first for you, 30 seconds long. Let's have a little look.
Please call. Ron Paul became a flight surgeon in the Air Force. As a doctor, Ron Paul delivered over 4,000 babies and is a leading defender of life in Congress. Ron Paul never voted to raise taxes, never voted for an unbalanced budget, never voted to restrict gun rights or raise congressional pay. Protecting our God-given freedom. Ron Paul for president.
I'm Ron Paul. I approve this message.
Okay. So, another Ron Paul commercial. I think it's definitely an improvement over what we've seen in the past, but still not quite what I would call great. They've got $18+ million now. Let's spend a little bit of it on production quality for the media that you are putting out there, given the cost of the time that is being purchased, perhaps a little bit of an initial investment in the actual content would be helpful. It's not a bad commercial, but it's far from great. Still a step in the right direction nonetheless. Let's go ahead and have a look at Ron Paul at something called the Politics and Eggs Breakfast this morning. This is the first part here. I'm sorry, there's nothing I can do with this software to skip ahead, but the first part we simply see Congressman Paul being served some eggs. This is in New Hampshire, by the way.
Coming from Texas, you know, it's a little bit warmer there. But it is a delight to be here. I was actually raised in cold weather up in Pittsburgh before I went to Texas when I was taken into the service. But I want to thank the New England Council as well as the New Hampshire Political Library for hosting this. It's very nice, and I am very pleased to come out and visit. You know, when I first walked in, I saw three very familiar faces. I want to introduce them because they're up here campaigning. They happen to be my three granddaughters, and that is Valerie, Laura, and Lisa. They're back in the corner. Stand out. So with granddaughters like that, how can you go wrong with campaigning? You know, they're out knocking on doors. And, you know, the nice thing about campaigning in New Hampshire is there's a different attitude. You know, people who have a libertarian streak in them, you know, don't like to bother people. We like to be left alone ourselves, and we don't like to bother other people. And I've always had that streak in me where I'm reluctant to go into a restaurant and just go up and interrupt people. I'll tell you what, my staff will encourage me, no, in New Hampshire, you got to do that. You got to talk to the people and shake hands. But when you do it up here, they don't, you don't get very many of any frowns. Most of them are very interested, and you know, and you're well received here. And there'll be a question. It's almost like they expect you to do it. And I enjoy that because I don't feel like I'm imposing on people when I come and say hello and shake their hands and interrupt their meals. But it is a real delight to be here. And it is true there's something going on significantly with the campaign and what's going on in this country. And I'm asked that continuously. And, you know, about the fundraising, because you know, you can have enthusiasm, you can have a staff, you can have views that you think are very good, but you might not get any attention. And the attention seems to have come when the proof of the pudding was that there were a large number of people willing to send money. Even when there was enthusiasm on the internet, especially after the debate, we would get a sudden burst of attention on our website and a burst of donations. Back then, a burst was $50,000, and $50,000 a day is not bad when you didn't have to do anything. You didn't have to call up anybody. You didn't have to pay money for direct mail, and you didn't have to pay any commission. But now it's sort of gotten out of control. I don't know what to do about it. I mean, the money just keeps coming in. And so there is something really significant going on. So if it's the message, in one way, it's sort of sad, because the message that I have is the message of America. It was said that I'm a champion of freedom. And if I had to summarize one word of what the campaign is all about, it's champion the cause of freedom and the Constitution that protects our freedom. And we talk about hope for America. We talk about peace and different foreign policy. And if we do all these things, we have prosperity, and we really don't have to worry about our future. But if we don't do anything, we better be worried about our future. And I talk about those problems. So I find it interesting, though I spend most of my time in a speech or at a rally talking about the problems that we face. It's our overextension in foreign policy, our runaway spending, the runaway welfare state, the attack on our dollar. Problems are overwhelming. You know, we've been involved in medical care. The government's been involved for 30-some years, and nobody seems to be happy with medical care. The cost goes up, quality goes down, the doctor's unhappy, the doctors are quitting, and the expense goes
up. Good. So there's a little piece from Congressman Paul today at a political activity in New Hampshire. And I just like brief comment. I think that he talks about the message of freedom. And I think that one thing I think that a lot of people just don't get about freedom is they think freedom is the ability to go to the shopping mall and buy whatever they want. Freedom is the ability to indulge yourself in whatever luxury that you can afford. You know, freedom is somehow associated with basically self-gratification and pleasure. And the kind of freedom that Congressman Paul is talking about is really the freedom to live your own life without having it intervened by big government in every way, shape, and form. And if you look around and you're observant enough, you cannot see any particular any part of your life that is not penetrated by the hand of government, whether in the form of taxes, whether in the form of regulation, whether in the form of policing or some sort of legislation. Every single aspect of your life from cradle to grave is thoroughly penetrated by government, and we question as to whether this constitutes freedom. There was a time when this simply was not the case. We have forgotten that, and we don't know what freedom is anymore. So next we're going to have for you Senator Mike Gravel and Democratic presidential candidate Mike Gravel. I'm going to play a series of clips here that he recently answered 10 questions from an organization online about the political situation of the country, and these are short 30-second, 20-second pieces. I'm going to play these just by way of introduction, and then we're going to go to Senator Gravel.
Unequivocally in support of public financing for elections. What we do today is through the media is anoint those who raise the most money. What we're saying is, because we all know that money is the corrupting influence in politics, and so what we're saying is those who raise the most money are the ones most likely to become the leaders of our country, but they're also the ones that are most corrupt. I am totally in support of abolishing corporate personhood, but I'll tell you very candidly, it can never take place until the American people are empowered to do the job. You're asking the people who run for office to turn around and do something they physically, mentally, and intellectually cannot do, and that is to bite the hand that feeds. I not only oppose what the federal government is doing with respect to marijuana and the whole war on drugs. It has to be ended. The war on drugs is savaging our inner cities. Marijuana is not a gateway drug. Marijuana is not addictive any more so than alcohol. And so the sooner we can deregulate marijuana and the sooner we can begin to treat addiction as the public health problem that it is, rather than a criminal problem, the sooner we'll be able to contribute to the sanity of public policy. The most important thing I'm doing in my campaign, and the most important thing I'll do as President of the United States, is to empower you to be able to make laws. And it's only when the American people are empowered to make laws, which is the central power of government, will you be able to have any kind of transparency and to overcome the unbelievable amount of secrecy that is foisted on the American people. 95% of what the people hold secret, what the government holds secret, should not be secret. No one running for office can reduce the size of government. That's an historic fact. You want to reduce the size of government, vote to empower the American people. They are more conservative than their leaders, regardless of whether those leaders are conservative or liberal. The people will reduce the size of government, not any elected official. Our political leadership has induced fear in the American people to sustain the military-industrial complex. We have induced fear so that we can do unbelievable spying on our people. When we turn around and tell people that we have to spy on them to provide for their security, we lie. What we do is we destroy their freedom and we do not provide the security. Of course it doesn't work, and that's self-evident. And yet everybody buys into the continuation of the system. You cannot change the system of representative government with its party structure until you empower the American people to become lawmakers so they can exercise the central power of government, making laws. And when the American people are so empowered, then you'll see some fundamental changes. It is appalling for people, progressives, good people, who turn around and expect that there will be some change in government when year after year after year you don't see the changes. That's the definition of insanity. Repeating over and over again something that doesn't work with the expectation that it will work. We cannot continue that foolishness. We have to vote to empower the American people. That is by enacting the national initiative, and that's the reason why I'm running for office. That is the most important thing I will be able to do as president, will be to bully you to vote to empower yourself. Then we'll see some change. Voting for me without the people empowered to make laws will not bring about any change really worth a damn.
Okay, so there we have some comments on a variety of topics from Senator Mike Gravel. And I believe we have Senator Gravel on the line, hold on just a moment while we clear up this little technical problem.
Oh, you do have me online.
Good. Hold on just a second. I have to... Okay, we should be ready now.
Okay.
All right, Senator Gravel, you with us?
Yes, I'm with you.
All right, well, thank you so very much for joining us. Really appreciate your being here today, and I know that all of our listeners and viewers are interested to hear more about you and learn. I think it's a question for me, certainly, of educating me about you and your positions, your outlook, and a little bit about your history. We know that you were a senator. You left the Senate in what year, sir? Can you remind me?
1980.
And you were in the Senate for how many years?
12 years. And
12 years.
In the first 4 years, I filibustered and forced the end of the draft, stopped the nuclear testing in the North Pacific, started the nuclear critique to limit the amount of the production of energy by nuclear fission, brought about the Alaska pipeline, pushing it through by one vote in the Congress, and released the Pentagon Papers and a few other things. And I did all of that within 4 years.
Wow. That's. I wish we had more senators who are taking similar action, because there's certainly issues of similar paramount before us today, without any question, perhaps even more paramount than at that time. Certainly the whole question of the direction of our country and the entire future of our nation, whether it's even going to exist or not, is on the table. So if we had more men like you in office right now, we would hopefully have a chance. Now, that begs the question. It just seems like we do have less legislators at this point in time that are willing to stand up for something and aren't completely bought off. And there's something that has changed from that time to the present. What is your understanding of how and why that change happened? And, you know, where are we today politically in America?
Well first off, nothing has really changed. That's the sadness. We're stuck in a situation where we think that the present, what's going on right now, is the worst possible situation. It's not. We've been denied our role. I'm talking about the people have been denied our role right from the get-go. And when we declared our independence under the Declaration of Independence, we made it clear to the world that we believe that all human beings are created equal. Well, 8 years later, 10 years later, they turned around and fashioned a document that made it possible to enshrine slavery for perpetuity, and treated a slave as three-fifths of a person, and then turned around and put four other limiting factors, very undemocratic factors, into the Constitution, and they're still there. And they create mischief and cause us problems today. And what people fail to realize is that our founding fathers, they felt that the people should be able to make laws. But the people were denied this power in order to be able to slip slavery into the Constitution and keep it there, and it took a civil war. So when we look around today, and Ron Paul and I have some basic differences in some of the views. You know, some people identify with many of the libertarian views that I have. Well, it's real simple. The people do not have power. All you can do on election day is give your power away. You give it to Republicans, you give it to Democrats, and then you find, to your utter chagrin, is that nothing really changes regardless of who's in power. It doesn't mean we try to vote for good people, but the structure of representative government is broken. It's so structured that it never has worked properly, and it never will work properly, and we are now paying that price today.
Okay, well, that's certainly an interesting and intriguing point of view, and something that can certainly be successfully argued without question. You are bringing up this National Initiative for Democracy. I've been trying to do a little bit of reading about it, and the idea that representative government is broken is certainly an interesting theme. Can you tell us about the National Initiative for Democracy, where it came from, and what it proposes to do?
Well, first off, if you accept the thesis, and my experiences inform me in that regard, the representative government is broken. It won't get any better. In fact, it'll get worse. Then you have to look at, well, what's the solution to the problem? It's not electing another group of individuals. We've been doing that for over 200 years. So you have to look at it. You've got only two possible venues for change. One is the government, wherein lies the problem, and electing people to work in that problem area, or going to the people directly and asking them to bring about the fundamental change. Well, in order for the people to bring about fundamental change, they have to have the same power that we've invested in the government through the Constitution. And that power, that central power, is not voting. No, voting is how you give your power away on election day. That central power is lawmaking. So if we want to bring about the empowerment of the American people, they have to have the same power as government, that is the power to make laws. And that's what I've written. I've written a piece of legislation called a National Initiative, and it is now on the shelf. It has procedures where the people will be able to make laws in every government jurisdiction of the United States. It will not be enacted by the Congress, but when 60 million Americans vote to make this the law of the land, it will then, the people will then be empowered to make the necessary changes. And what will happen, the minute you put the people in charge, now you will have control over the growth of government. And you'll see, because you see, the people are more conservative than their leaders, regardless of who their leaders are. And why? Very simply, they know it's their money.
So, Senator, you do concur that the size of government is a central problem, that the government has extended itself into areas, it has increased its size and as well as its scope in ways that are not authorized by the Constitution, and that it is a central problem of American politics that we need to reduce the size of government. Would you concur with that?
I concur with that, but it's oversimplistic, because what government is a tool, and when you need it, you use it. When you don't need it, you put it aside. But that's not the way we've approached it for the last 200 plus years. What we do is we use it and expand it and expand it and expand it. And as we expand it, we create empires, bureaucracies. Here, and you get the anomaly where you get the conservative, he's for reducing the size of the government in the social area, but man, there's no limit to the size of government in the military expenditures. And then you get the liberals who want to bring some kind of examination of the way we spend our military dollars, and then, of course, anything for the purposes of expanding the social programs, because you just buy off people by the pound. It's much more complex than that. And the interesting facet of this, if you empower the people to be able to make laws, they will handle this complexity considerably better than our present leaders even approach the problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a similar analysis to what Congressman Paul makes. He makes the same analysis and calls it the welfare state and the warfare state, and that they're set apparently in opposition politically, but in fact they're both vehicles of big government and both fueled by the same forces, much as you described.
Yeah, right, but what's his solution, though? What is his solution?
His solution is to return to the Constitution and...
Wait a second. Stop a minute. Yeah. His solution is to go back to the Constitution?
Correct.
Okay, well then, what do you do with the inequality and the undemocratic feature of the Senate? What do you do with the inequality of the Electoral College? What do you do with the inequality of federal elections controlled by the states? Yeah, what do you do with those inequalities? They're all in the Constitution right now, and the people do not have the power to change the Constitution.
There certainly is the constitutional power to amend the Constitution. There's no question about that.
By who?
By the states, by passage of...
That's right. You know. Now, just look at the numbers. It 13 chambers, because 13 it takes... 13 states to stop any constitutional change. Does it surprise you that we've never had any fundamental change in the Constitution since our nation was founded? Because the minority controls the way we run ourselves. And they're not about to cede that. And so to amend the Constitution, you have to have the agreement of the minority.
Right.
And the minority, in this particular case, is 13 chambers, not 13 states. Either the House or the Senate of 13 chambers can stop any reform of the Constitution, and that's the reason why we don't have any reforms.
Certainly. There's lots of validity to what you're saying. However, there's also plenty of validity to pointing out and acting from the fact that we simply aren't applying the Constitution as written today, and that the government has extended itself unconstitutionally in size and scope. And if we were to actually apply the Constitution, that would mandate a real reduction in the size of government
and a
withdrawal of government from our personal liberties.
It's a little bit like a Tonto with the Lone Ranger. What's this we, Kemosabe, Steve? You say we. You can't do anything. You don't have any power to make law. So what are you talking about we, or what's Ron Paul talking about? We ought to do this. We ought to do that. That's what you hear from politicians. Here's what's wrong. We ought to stand up and be patriotic and do it. That's nothing. That means nothing. Do you not see that? That to define the problem and then say we ought to do something is nothing.
Well, I think that it's certainly possible to have a political movement in this country where we do elect people that do stand for the Constitution and put them into Congress and put them into government on all different levels. And I'm not saying it wouldn't be a tremendous battle. I would not say that it is not a revolution, because it is in fact a revolution to do so. But that is what we feel is in progress right now. I think that your attitudes and your views are very much a part of that process. And that we're seeing a collapse of the established political paradigm that we've seen in this country for the last 100 years or so, the liberal, conservative, Republican, Democrat, warfare state bifurcation is breaking down, and things are certainly ripe and for a change, and the change is coming. People are waking up, and, you know, your candidacy, Ron Paul's candidacy, the Kucinich candidacy is all part of that.
No, it's not. No, it's not. And I would beg to differ with all due respect. Change is coming. Two things can happen when things break down. They can get worse or they can get better. Now, they can get worse if you don't have an alternative, if you don't have a specific plan of action. And telling me that you're just going to go elect good people, that's been the watchword for over 200 years. And that is copping out to the existing structure of representative government, which you're prepared to admit is broken. If it's broken, how can you expect the people who benefit from the structure to repair it?
We don't. We're going to force them to do it.
Force them to do it? Tell me how you're going to do that.
By our political action, organizing, and taking advantage of every opportunity we have. Now this National Initiative for Democracy may be one of those tools that could be used in that process.
One of?
Wait,
do you know any other tool?
The ballot box is one of them. Electing representatives
is
one of them. There's many different tools that can be used.
With all due respect, if the ballot box were a solution, we wouldn't have the problem we have today, right? You think we're all dumb?
Yes, I think the 200 years
that the people repeat over and over again and something doesn't work? Now you want to go back to the ballot box again? Who are you going to elect? You need 500 Ron Pauls who will get elected? You think you're going to get them?
That's in the process of happening, yeah. As a matter of fact, people are running for Congress.
Well, wait a second. Here, I'll give you a good example. Here, you just get the Republicans who rip the Congress apart with their earmarks and spending money like drunken sailors and campaigning for 100 years on fiscal conservatism, and then they go in there and they go crazy. And then you turn around and you get the Democrats in there, and then we talk of, oh boy, we got great leaders now, and we're going to deal. Did you read what we just passed in the way of an energy bill?
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you two instances how bad it gets. Here, we passed an energy bill that because of lobbyists for Archer Daniel Midland, we have made the mainstream of our energy program ethanol. Ethanol is going the wrong way. It's a pollutant. It spends more, uses up more water and more energy than it provides. And then we turn around and we have CAFE standards that, whoa, we're saying how great we are. By the year 2020, we're going to have 35 miles per gallon average for the fleet. Okay? In Europe, right today, it's 44.2, and it's going to take us 12 years to get to 35. If this is leadership, boy, I don't know what we're talking about.
Well, you're right. I think that you're absolutely right that the paradigm of Republicans versus Democrats at this point, there's absolutely no difference between the Republican and the Democratic Party. They're both parties of big government and of big war, and there's no difference whatsoever between them. There are individuals within the parties that have some right on ideas and are working in our interest, but those are just individuals. You're right. It's absolutely corrupt. I think that the fact that the Homegrown Terrorism and Violent Radicalization Prevention Act sailed through Congress 404-6 and is now before the Senate, no doubt to be passed. I'm sure you're aware this is basically a thought crime bill, which starts to categorize our very mode of thought as criminal, as anti-state, and and really is a compromising of our First Amendment rights. This is a bipartisan bill. This is put out by Democrats. This is the Democrats who are mainly behind it, and here they are. You know, the on the leading edge of collapsing our civil rights in favor of what you so appropriately pointed out. In favor of security over freedom. You know, any time that you have that happen, you always lose both. And I want to get back to your National Initiative for Democracy. Now, that that piece is that something that where did it come from? And is this a mechanism that's already part of our structure that we're simply not using, or is this something entirely new that's proposed to be created?
It's not entirely new in that regard. You can trace all of this. And I fancy myself a student of history and a scholar in many respects, a constitutional scholar. And so I've picked up bits and pieces here. The framers, as I pointed out, if you look at a lot of their quotes, they all say that the people should be lawmakers. But when they got to Philadelphia, they cut a deal with the devil, and they had to throw the people over the side in order to make it stick. But then you had at the turn of the century, because of the unbelievable corruption of business enterprise after the Civil War and the robber baron era, then along came the progressives, and they put in place what they called IRR laws, Initiative, Referendum, and Recall. And that was put in place in 24 states. And essentially that expansion petered out with the First World War. And it hasn't been picked up since, other than about 30 years ago, in California with Prop 13, you had a resurgence of the use of initiatives to make laws. And so I sort of picked up on that. I grappled with this in 1971 in a book called Citizen Power, which I'm reissuing incidentally, and have rewritten two-thirds of it. And it deals extensively with what I'm talking about right now. And that is that the answer lies with the people, not with elected officials. Even if I were elected president of the United States, I cannot bring about the program that I want to see brought about. Nor can Ron Paul, nor can anybody else. What we need to do is to have you and the other Americans empowered to make laws. Then I can put my program in front of you to vote on when the Congress won't vote on it, or you can develop a program and get enough people to join with you and put it before the American people. The people are more creative than their leaders. The leaders have barriers and limitations to what they can do. They're structural and generic, and they cannot be overcome. But the people do not have those barriers. And so with the National Initiative, I've taken the experience of the 24 states. I've taken the experience of the way the Constitution was first designed and tweaked the changes that need to be made. I've taken the experience of Switzerland. There's only one place on earth that has what I'm talking about from a national point of view, and that's Switzerland. They copied our Constitution in 1848, and the only difference they made is they brought the people into the operation of government as partners with their elected officials. And ever since, at that time, they had just finished a three-year religious civil war, and ever since, they've lived in peace. And even Alex de Tocqueville, that unusual genius who understood the American psyche, he said, this won't work in Switzerland. They have four languages, four cultures, four religions, and they have no economic resources. Well, it has worked in Switzerland. They have lived in peace ever since. They have, economically, they're the most successful people in the world, and they had no assets to begin with. And lo and behold, what we look at now, we see there, and the only thing that distinguishes them from every other representative government is that they brought the people into the governing process. That's what we could have in this country with the enactment of the national initiative.
Well,
now,
I can't dispute the attractiveness of the concept of what you're saying, and it's particularly appealing to anyone who is a constitutionalist or with libertarian leanings, because I think one of the things that we're interested in seeing is power moving back to the local and state levels and away from the federal level. So, if we can get deeper into the actual mechanism of what you're discussing here, it sounds like something that is going to be that starts at the state level and then moves to the federal level with an initiative, much in the way an amendment to the Constitution might move, and a legislative initiative from the people being proposed first on a local level, then the state level, then up to the national level. Or describe exactly the mechanisms by how this would come about.
Yeah,
maybe we could use an example of saying...
I'd be happy. Let me do that. But
okay.
First, I want to dispute a little bit your analysis that you're making the classic assumption that government, which is closest to people, is the best government. That's not so. Empirically, many times it's more corrupt at that level. You've got to look at it more objectively. And what I've done is I've created a tool that will permit you to make laws at the local level, the state level, and the federal level. And I've copied the procedures of the Congress. See, I was Speaker of the House when I was in Alaska, and so I have some experience on the legislative side from a leadership point of view. So I've copied those procedures. I've tweaked them so that they can work at any level of government. And so we don't turn around and advantage any particular level. It would be a mistake. In fact, I made that mistake, and that is to try to jumpstart the national initiative at the state level. Hell, I went to court, you know, all the way to the Supreme Court, because every time you turn around to try and empower the people, you get sabotaged by the existing power of government, the politicians, the judiciary, and the media. Why do you think that I am more silenced and more hidden by the media than Ron Paul or Kucinich? I'm more threatening. I'm the guy they fear, not Ron Paul, because Ron Paul can talk a good game, and I applaud him for that. But he doesn't threaten them, not for a half a second, and nor does Kucinich. In fact, by having those two guys on the scene, it makes it look like they're being fair, when they're not in the slightest. What causes fear is that the diminution of their power. And when I'm talking about the national initiative, that empowers the people. Who do you think loses power? The ruling elites of our society and the media, who are part of the ruling elites. Now, you want me to give you an example how it would work? Let's just, what's an issue you want to have enacted into law? Pick one.
Just off the top of my head, you mentioned the war on drugs, and let's say legalizing drugs. It's my belief that government has no business passing a law telling me what I can and cannot put in my body.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, and before the First World War, there was never a problem in this regard. That's all been fabricated by the government since the First World War, and we can thank Mr. Woodrow Wilson, among other things, who initiated that whole approach. But let's go back to, you and I want to draft a piece of legislation that's going to take us back to an area where drugs are a decision made by an individual, and and party to, because drugs may have medical consequences. So a doctor and an individual. I'm talking about hard drugs. Now, marijuana is not a hard drug, not a gateway drug, not addictive. We've gone through this whole exercise with prohibition on alcohol, and we've learned to handle alcohol. We can do the same thing with marijuana. Now, so you and I, we call up the Electoral Trust. See, we have to create in this legislation the Electoral Trust. See, the Senate, and that's the problem that you have with the 24 states, it's all controlled by representative government. The people think that they're legislating, and they do a very good job, but it's not the best way to do it. And so the people have to be independent legislators. They have to have an agency that does the administrative work for them. That's called the Electoral Trust. So you and I call up the Electoral Trust, tell them we want this law drafted for us, and that's a government expense. Because now I have that benefit when I was a senator. So now we get back to legislation, we look at it, we like it, say, okay, now this is where the government stops. You and I have to go get this legislation qualified. We can do this by initiative, by a poll or signatures. But there have to be enough Americans that say they want to vote on this. Not that they're for or against, but they want to vote on it. So after we get it qualified, then we don't have to spend another sou. The Electoral Trust will convene a hearing process using the most advanced technology, whatever that will be, and they'll have a hearing. And then you and I can question experts. We can hear testimony from proponents, opponents, you name it. And then and party to the hearing would be the proper legislative committee of the government jurisdiction question. If it's a state level, it'd be a state committee. If it's a federal level, it'd be a federal committee or a city council member at the local level. So now we have the hearing. After the hearing is done, we then transfer the hearing record and the legislation to a deliberative body. It's a little bit like, and this is a, I picked this up from a professor in Germany, and but it looks a little bit like a jury system, but not really, because the jury system is not all that effective. But this would set up a pool nationally of 20 million people who are basically qualified. They don't have to have all PhDs. They can be, some people can be very, very modest. Wisdom and knowledge are not necessarily the product of education. They're the product of human experience. And so we have this pool, and we draw from this pool a group of people who will then go over in detail the hearing record and the legislation. And then we can sit down with these people, discuss with them. They can amend the legislation. And then after that deliberation,
Senator, if I may, for just to, so that I understand, I can follow your thread here. Where is this all taking place? Is this taking place on a local or a state level or a federal level? What level are we talking at right now?
At any one you want. If it's a federal piece of legislation, it's taking place at a federal level. If it's taking place at a local level, it's taking place at the local level of government.
So let me back up here and let's say we decide there's a national consensus that all drug laws ought to be repealed and that there ought to be no regulation on the consumption of drugs by American citizens and we draft a national legislation for the repeal of all drug laws and the
correct
legalization of everything.
And that would be a federal. That would be federal. That would not be federal.
Local. It could be done on a state level as well if you wanted to. It could be done even on a local level if you wanted to.
Stop right there.
Okay,
The reason why I want to stop you is that you always want to keep in mind that if you do something at the local level, it can always be upset by the state level or the federal level. So if you're going to do something that you think is very, very important and has consequences across the board nationally, then you want to do it nationally. That's simple. Otherwise, because they can undo it on you after you've worked your heart out at the state or local level.
Unless you're standing constitutionally on the power of the states to determine their own laws.
No. Forget the Constitution. The Supreme Court...
You're going to have a hard time getting me to forget the Constitution, Senator.
Well, wait a second. Stop a minute. Supreme Court adjudicates the Constitution. Okay? So if you and I pass a law that these nine members decide is not constitutional, they throw our law in the toilet after you and I worked our heart out for it.
Well, that's what you call the rule of men rather than the rule of law. And one thing
Well, wait a second. Who do you think is going to adjudicate the Constitution?
Mm-hmm. Well,
Wait a second. The Holy Trinity? Who do you think is going to adjudicate the Constitution if there's a dispute over what the words say?
Well, you're right. It's subjective as to what is constitutional, and what is not.
When
in the course of human events, a people discovers that it has fallen under a tyranny, it is the right and duty of that people to rise up and replace that tyranny. And if we do have a Supreme Court which consistently rules against the Constitution, then that Supreme Court needs to be replaced entirely. And I think that's where we're at right now. But let's go back to
stop. You raise a good point. You raise a very good point. Now, how are you going to do that? I've got a plan to do that. You don't. My plan is real simple. That with the national initiative, the people have a right to amend the Constitution. They have a right to do away with the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
They can
I think they can
do that under the national initiative.
Yeah.
You have no way to do that other than go get a gun and get your butt thrown in jail.
Right. Yeah, I think that a lot of what you're saying is worthy of consideration.
Come up with an alternative. Don't give me this worthy of consideration. That's the old political campaign rhetoric. Oh, you got a great idea. I'll take it into consideration.
I'm being sincere. I'm not. If I don't have
give
full information, if I don't have full understanding, I'm not going to give it my endorsement until I fully understand it and I have a full information on the subject. I'm just saying.
Oh, yeah.
I'm listening to what you're saying, and I'm giving it due consideration in as much as I have information before me right now. But there's lots of labels that get thrown around out there. There's conservative, there's liberal, there's all these labels, and one of the labels that we actually don't hear as often as we used to, I've heard you mention a couple of times. I saw it on your website. Is the label progressive? Now, would you accept that label as a progressive?
I would accept that I am progressive, libertarian, republican, liberal, conservative, classic liberal. I mean, I look at these issues and I'm not bothered by labels. And that's tough politically. You see, Ron Paul has an advantage over me. He can raise more money because, you see, he doesn't confuse people. He's libertarian and he's a pure libertarian, okay? I talk a little bit, and I sound libertarian, then all of a sudden you look at another thing and you say, my God, he's liberal. And then you go a little further, well, my God, I don't understand what he is. I confuse people. Well, all I'm asking you to think is I don't want to confuse you. I just want you to use your God-given brain and reason things out and not take things as a given. And,
Absolutely. The time is to question everything that we know and have a real hard look, because the future is being decided right now. What you're proposing is a sort of direct democracy, and I've certainly thought to myself, with the advent of technology and the way it is, if it could be somehow worked out, in a way that certainly mechanisms did. Now, here's the thing: we are, in my view, a democratic republic. So you've got Democrats over here, and you've got Republicans over here. Now, I think if you go back far enough in time, there was an actual difference of opinion. Democrats favoring the idea of the people being direct deciders of the affairs of the nation, and Republicans are people who are more enamored of the rule of law, and so that you have the rule of law rather than the rule of men. The problem with democracies being that you end up with the tyranny of the majority. If we had a system such as you're proposing, or some sort of electronic direct democracy, it could be conceivable that all it be decided because of the unpopularity of a particular group of people, that all babies of such nationality ought to be executed. And if 51% of the people push the right button, that becomes law. So we don't have rule of law anymore. It seems as though we need to have both rule of law, where there are certain rules that govern the way things are done and how decisions are made, and protect the views and the rights of the minority, as well as democracy. So a democratic republic, is what's in order here. I'm concerned, my primary concern is with the rule of law, that we do not have the rule of law in this country today. We have the rule of men. If we can work towards the reestablishment of rule of law, then we can start to look at having a more democratic action on the part of the people along the lines that you're talking. So it seems as though, you need a little bit of both.
Well, I'm sorry. I don't see a little bit of both. They're both the same. The word democrat comes from the Greek, demos, people, and the word republic is Latin and also means people. And so they're both the same. It's the people rule. In a republic, the people rule. In a democracy, the people rule. Now, you can parse it to get these fine points, and I just don't see that. But it sounds good like rhetoric. And now, let's get back to one really fundamental point you raised, and I don't know if you appreciate how important it is. And that is that the tyranny of the majority. Now, if you don't have... How are you going to stop the tyranny of the majority? That's a question.
Mm-hmm. Well, the rule of law is the way you stop the tyranny.
Don't give me the rule of the law. It's the people enforce. Somebody enforces the law. You talk about the rule of law like some abstract cloud. It's not. That's not the way the law works. And go to a legislative body and watch it for a while. That's not the way it works. You have a law, we pass a law, the law could be a good law or a bad law. So if you have a bad law, now you got the rule of law, and the law says everybody should go to jail.
That's not the rule of law.
That's the rule of law.
That's not the rule of law I'm referring to, because you can have unconstitutional laws, you can have illegal laws, and that's what we certainly are, a land of illegal laws today, because we simply don't apply the Constitution that the Founding Fathers gave us.
The Founding Fathers... Please don't use that against me, because if you took what the Founding Fathers gave you, you'd still have slavery. Okay, so let's not talk about the Founding Fathers and the rule of law. They don't use it in the same breath with me. You can talk to some kids in grammar school about that, but don't talk to an adult about it. And Americans buy that spoon, that gruel all day long. It makes no sense at all. We're talking about human beings in their efforts to govern themselves. And they have a simple choice. You can be governed by the vote of the majority, the constituency of the majority, or you can be governed by the minority. We are governed today by the minority. And that's representative government. And so when you keep saying that, we're going to get some good people, we're just going to change the people in the pew, but they'll will still be governed by the minority. And that's what's wrong with our society. And what I've put in place is a law that will permit the people to be governed by the majority. Now, what is the safeguard of the people going crazy and reinstituting slavery? There is no safeguard. There is none. You either believe in the majority or you don't. And if you don't, you believe in the minority. And that's what you got. So you shouldn't complain. If you don't buy into unreserved faith in the wisdom of the people, then you shouldn't be bellyaching.
Well, I do think that we do need to rely upon the people and believe in the people and believe that a free people can better rule their own personal affairs and the affairs of the country than
a tiny
minority.
But we don't have free people. You admit that. We don't have... You know what freedom is, the definition of freedom? Freedom is participation in power. People do not participate in power right now. Now, you sort of think that because they go on election day and vote that they participate. They don't. You're manipulated. I raise money as a candidate from special interests to turn around and use the money to manipulate the people in my constituency to vote for me, and then I go to Congress and I get elected and I get seniority, and then I can do what the hell I want, as long as the people in my little district keep me there.
Absolutely.
And then, of course, you've got the 30,000 lobbyists that will help keep me there. I mean, you just look at the mishmash of what we have. There is
no. I need to interrupt you here for a technical reason. Right now, I want to advise BBSRadio.com listeners that we will be going to the next show right now. If you would like to continue to stay with Senator Gravel and I for another, let's say, 7 to 10 minutes. Then you can go to RonPaulFreedomMessage.com, RonPaulFreedomMessage.com, and log on to the show there and watch the video player, RonPaulFreedomMessage.com.